And we'll do quick attendance roll call. Chair Jennifer Campbell is excused. Alder John Uguer is here. Alder Dina Nina Martinez Rutherford is here. Alder Harrington McKinney. I did not see join. Angela Jones is here. Tiffany Malone is excused. Megan Miller is here. And Matt Fair is here, and he'll be chairing the meeting. The floor is yours, Chair.
Thank you, Ben. All right, let's start off with getting a motion to approve last month's minutes in a second. We have a motion by Angela, second by Alder Dean and Nina. Thank you. Any discussion on the minutes? Any corrections, deletions, questions? Seeing none. I'll do it as Chair Campbell does. So I'll assume that all votes are unanimous unless there is someone who's speaking up to vote no or abstain. Seeing none, that motion passes. Public comment. I believe we do not have anyone for public comment, correct, Ben? Or Lynette?
That is correct.
Great, thank you. Disclosures and recusals. Does anybody on the committee need to say anything about that? All right, seeing none. That takes us right into our new business, and new business is public comment. Our item number one is public comment, rather. I assume we do not have any public comment, so that will take us to item number two, which is amending the capital improvement projects identified in the Hawthorne-Truax neighborhood plan, which was previously approved by Common Council, and redirects CDBG funds from lighting improvements to the creation of an art mural at Hawthorne Elementary School. Could we get a motion for this agenda item before we hear about it? All right, we got a motion from Angela, second from Alder Dean and Nina. John, I believe you're going to talk about this one.
I sure am. That's great to
Great.
see everybody. Good evening. The resolution before you is to reallocate $5,000. Basically, what happened was originally they were going to spend $5,000 to replace existing lighting with LED lights in the neighborhood. And our friends in planning had done some additional engagement with the neighborhood association, and they had made the request to actually divert those funds to public art, and specifically a mural on the school, or replacing an existing mural on the school. And so that is the resolution before you. It doesn't add any additional money. It is just diverting from one use to another. So I think I'll leave it there if anyone has any questions.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions for staff? Okay, I don't see any. Anyone have any discussion before we come to a vote or any thoughts on the agenda item? Seeing none, let's go to a vote. Again, assuming that there isn't anyone, or I'll give a little time for anyone who'd like to vote no or abstain. Seeing none, that motion passes unanimously. Thank you. So, moving on to item two, which is authorizing a loan of up to $43,000 to Solace Friends, Inc. from the Community Facilities Loan Program to help finance their exterior improvements for its facility located on Monona Drive, and of course, authorizing the mayor and the city clerk to sign an agreement for that purpose. Need a motion. Motion by Alder Dean and Nina. Second by Megan. Thanks, Megan. John, go ahead.
All right. So the resolution, again, $43,000 to Solace Friends. They applied through the Community Facilities Loan Program, which is it is intended to support nonprofits in our community that provide programming and services primarily to households at or below 80% AMI. And Solace Friends is a hospice center, so they provide short-term services to people who are in hospice care. They had a request for some exterior improvements, like extending their fence and a new deck and some additional exterior improvements to their facility. They requested a loan up to $43,000. And I will leave it there if anyone has any questions.
Any questions? Yeah, Angela, go ahead, please.
Thank you, Chair. In the their application for funding, there was some mention of the fence that they wanted to continue blocking off or fencing off the rest of their territory, and they mentioned something about possible some theft or something about making sure that they were keeping people's medication safe. Has that been an issue for this particular location? And is there any other security stuff that they need for that space, given the population?
Yeah, you're right. In their application, they did speak to the fence as a security measure to protect to keep people from the rear yard of their facility. Apparently, they've had instances where people have just ended up in their backyard, and so enclosing the space is going to add that level of security. But beyond that, there was no additional security features in their request.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? John, I'll just ask, can you give the community an update? I know there's $1 million authorized for this program. Can you just remind us like kind of the status of it, where we're at as far as how much money's left and number of programs that we've already approved? Just a little reminder would be awesome.
Sure, I can tell you that there's a little over $700,000 remaining currently. And I can tell you how many projects we funded over the years. If you just
Or just
give me
this year, you know.
once. Oh, just this year.
Yeah, just.
In 2025, we have funded three projects. That would be including this one. CEOs tomorrow, the Eastmoreland Community Center, and then Solis House, hopefully. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, right. So just a follow-up, I guess. It seems like it was more robust last year. Maybe I'm not remembering that, but
Yeah, we had six projects last year. You're right.
Do we go through, everything that was allocated pretty much?
We got very close to allocating all the funds. We had funds remaining from 2023 as well that rolled over. But we still continue to get inquiries about the program, and I do anticipate an application coming down the line here in the next few months. So there's still interest in the program.
Okay, great. Thank you. All right, anybody else? Angela, is that you again? Yeah, okay. Go ahead.
Sorry, one more quick question. Is there a maximum amount that they can request for these loans that are, is it a loan or is it just a grant that they're being given?
Sure, it's a loan,
Two
but
questions, sorry.
no, it's okay. I'll do the second question first. So it is a loan, but it is a long-term deferred loan. So it's only payable if they ever were to sell the property, or its use is no longer, conforms to the CFL guidelines. The first question, can you
Maximum,
remind me what
the maximum
oh.
amount.
Thank you. It depends on the type of project. So for an acquisition or new construction project, we can offer up to $400,000, up to 50% of, I'm sorry, that's 20% of the total project cost. For a rehab, it's $300,000, and then we do have a leasehold improvement loan. So if they have a 10-year commitment, they can get $100,000, and a 5-year commitment can get a $50,000. And in the leasehold improvement loans, those actually the amount of the loan will fall off, and so after 10 years or 5 years, whatever it is, it does kind of turn into a grant in that way. But for new construction projects and rehab, it's a long-term deferred loan.
Great, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
That was questions. Any discussion on this item? Okay, seeing none, we'll move to a vote. If there are any people who'd like to vote no or abstain, please let me know now. Seeing none, this item passes unanimously. All right, that takes us to item four, which is authorizing the allocation of up to $2 million of city affordable housing funds to help MRCDC financed the rehabilitation and preservation of 7 units of rental housing and common area improvements at their scattered site properties. And the CDA to finance the rehabilitation and preservation of 11 units of rental housing in Monona Shores Apartments, authorizing the mayor and the clerk to enter into the loan agreement. All right, we need a motion. All right, thank you, Alder Dina Nina, and second by Alder Uguer. I believe Maria, you're on this one.
Hi, what everyone. Happy 5:43 p.m. I am here to talk about this resolution. So as you may know, the city sets aside $2 million for any CDA or city-sponsored affordable housing activities. And so the use of these $2 million this year will be for these two projects. So rehabilitating for phase four. So before we have come to you to get approval for phases 1, 2, 3 for the scattered site properties that MRCDC has. And so they've done a lot of great rehab work, improving the quality of those units immensely. And so these are vacant units. So that's project one. The majority of the funding is going towards the remaining 7 units of the scattered site properties. So that's $1,640,000. The other remaining money, so that's $360,000, is going to Monona Shores to assist in the rehabilitation of 11 units there. But that is it, and then I'll be open for questions.
Oops, no one heard me say that. I'll do it again.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Maria, could you just characterize the kind of improvements that we're looking at here? And I'm looking particularly at the 7 scattered ones where the dollars per unit is fairly hefty. I'm just curious as to the kind of improvements that we're looking at here.
Yeah, absolutely. So in the past phases, it's been estimated that on average, it's 75,000 that go towards each unit. But now this one also includes common area improvements. And so that's part of that, too. And some window replacements, but then general just rehab maintenance for everything from flooring to the actual, my gosh, what do you call it? The dishwasher and the AC and all of those components are incorporated into this rehab.
Thank you, Maria. Thank you, Chair.
Other questions for staff? Okay, seeing none. Thank you, Maria. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none, once again, if you would like to abstain or vote no, please signify. All right, seeing none, we'll consider that motion to be passed unanimously, or that item rather. Thank you. That takes us to item number 5, which is accepting the Economic Development Division's 2025 Small Business Assistance Policy Paper as a basis for structuring and conducting an RFP process and authorizing CED, Community and Economic Development Divisions to undertake this process and recommend for approval by the Common Council a funding allocation plan regarding awards and contracts will take effect on or before January 1st. Once again, we need a motion, please. Alder Dina Nina, thank you. And a second from Angela. Great. And Lynette, I believe you're on this one. Welcome.
Hello. And just for, I see Alder Harrington McCain just came in. So just for a point of order, we're on item number 5 on the agenda to discuss the policy paper for EDD. So I'm going to take you on a little history tour of how CDD used to fund our various services. So Matt Fair is probably the only one that remembers our wonderful summer funding process is what we called it. Every 2 years, my unit and community resources unit used to put all of our services out for RFP. So everything from housing development to down payment assistance to crisis response to homeless services and economic development all came in at one time. And we used to have huge, huge binders that we would read all of those applications at one time. And then our committees would make those decisions. And we did that for many, many years. And then we had a study done. Forward Community Investments helped us by doing a lot of consulting of interviewing us, interviewing our community partners about, is that the most effective way that we should be providing funding in our community? And ultimately, they were like, no, it is way too much. It is too much of a burden on your staff. And because you are trying to do too much at one time, you are not setting clear expectations for what your agencies are actually applying for. So what they ended up asking us to do, which we have now moved to, is RFPs by the actual service areas. And so that is why you now see RFPs come to you that are specifically for housing development, seeking tax credits, housing development for homeownership, housing development for rental, homeless services and housing resources. We feel that our RFPs have gotten a lot more detail.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, not sure what happened.
Okay. So our RFPs, with your help and your input, have gotten a lot more detail, a lot more expectations, a lot more objectives and goals, so that we can be clearer to the agencies of who are applying. As we were merging from summer funding process to developing the RFPs, we spent time on each of those service areas writing policy papers. So before we wrote an RFP, we really looked at what are we trying to accomplish? What are the goals? What are the objectives? What are the outcomes? And we would take the policy paper first to get approval. And then the next step is, through that guidance of the policy paper, write the RFP. So since 2014, when we were still doing our summer funding process, that was the last time that we put out to bid in RFP our economic development activities. What happened from 2014 to now? I lost a key member of my staff, Mike Miller, who oversaw all of our economic development, actually moved over to our economic development division. And I was very, very sad to lose such a wonderful staff member, because as I then went to recruit and hire new staff in our unit for economic development, really couldn't find anyone that ended up sticking in our unit long enough to release another RFP. And what we discovered, and why we had a lot of staff turnover in that area, is because my unit does not focus a lot on economic development opportunities. We fund it with our community development block grant funds. And so since my unit receives those federal funds, we thought it should be in our unit, but really ultimately we think it's better aligned with our economic development division. So instead of me hiring a staff person in my unit that would only work on a small piece of what is actually in our budget, we have now made an agreement. And since 2021, we have moved these contracts that are currently funded with CDBG funds, and they are now overseen by economic development. Great working relationship. Saran's office is actually my wall to my right. So we have great communication. And then we are able to still report to HUD all of that CDBG activity. So that is why we are now finally bringing the policy paper, because Saran and her team have been working with staff in our unit as well, as this is now the opportunity for us to actually have that staff capacity to say, we have been funding the same agencies at the same amount since 2014 in this category. It is time for us to reapply our policies and our metrics and post another RFP. This committee already earlier this year, when you guys approved our consolidated plan, we've also talked about the need for economic development opportunities. They receive very little to no city financial assistance. It's our current contracts for small business assistance are mostly all federal funded. So when you approved the CON plan earlier this year, you actually approved moving more of our CDBG funds into this service activity as well. So where we were previously awarding up to $249,000, which is not a lot to do a huge RFP. And so we appreciate that we now have the opportunity that our future CDBG allocations can support this activity some more. So we will be adding $200,000 more to support small business assistance. And the total that will go out in the RFP then is $450,000. With this, there are just now kind of going through the policy paper. Saran did a great job of highlighting just in this policy paper for anyone as well of the background and the need of why the city should continue to fund small business assistance. You as a committee already said in our CON plan, this should be something that not only continues, but should be getting more funding as well. So we knew we had your support in that manner. We have very limited opportunities because, again, we have to follow federal regulations on how much flexibility we have with the CDBG funds. They can go for two purposes and two purposes only. The first is job creation. CDBG funds can be given out in a manner in order that to create jobs for low to moderate income individuals. What they say, the federal regulations say, up to $35,000 of CDBG funds given should create a full-time job. And of the jobs created, 51% have to be employing people who came from low to moderate income households. So again, community development block grant funds, the point is supporting low to moderate income households with something. And in this case, it's new job creation. So that is one of the objectives that we are going to be again supporting in this RFP. The second economic development opportunity for CDBG is about supporting micro enterprises with technical assistance. So micro enterprise is a business with five or fewer employees. One of them is the owner. Again, this really focuses on ensuring that that micro enterprise is getting support. It could be with QuickBooks. It could be with other mentoring. There kind of is a list of the technical assistance. The owner has to be low to moderate income, or at least 51% of the employees have to be low to moderate income. Again, we still have to hit that LMI beneficiary criteria. So we kind of outlined all of that in this policy paper of the need for this funds, what we plan to do with these funds. Saran did highlight a few new reporting requirements that we want to ask of agencies as well. Right now, we really just focus on that job creation and how much technical assistance is being provided. We are going to be asking for new data metrics, such as how many loan applications did you receive for in order to evaluate for job creation? And then asking more detail as well of like what is the technical assistance you are providing versus just checking a box that you're providing technical assistance, just to help us figure out what's happening in the community. Ultimately, though, besides the fact that, you know, we have not bid these out for a really long time, we're adding more money. This is going to be a great opportunity, though, for us to look at the current providers that we're funding, maybe allow them to shift what has been in their ongoing contracts year after year. So we could get potentially new opportunities from current agencies, but it also opens up the door for any new nonprofits that are now in this space to come and access these funds when the door has been shut to them for a long time since we didn't have the capacity to issue an RFP. So I'm here to answer any questions, maybe about the CDBG funds. And then Saran's here as well that can answer lots of questions just on the city's involvement around economic development.
Thank you, Lynette. That was really helpful. That was a good history lesson. I remember those thick binders and long summers. I read every word of every one of them. So any questions for either Lynette or Saran? Yeah, Angela, go ahead.
Thank you. I do have a couple of questions, and I think this is great. I think we all commented when we saw like the updates on how things were progressing. We all made the comment, well, can we do better in this small business creation? And so I see, and given that history, understand why the numbers may not have been so high. So here are my questions. I'm reading on page, good grief. Well, looks like maybe page 1, 2, 3, 4, where you're talking about the loan program and for grants that are created that are getting $35,000 or more, that should cover kind of the cost of a full-time equivalent position. When you were thinking about, you know, asking for like full-time equivalent and figuring out that dollar amount, that minimum of $35,000, were you also thinking that that would include benefits? Because I was kind of playing around with the calculations and that's not a very high wage. And so I was wanting to know about more about, was there a thought behind other benefits like health insurance and other things? Because $35,000 really isn't going to cover that for like a full-time position.
Sure. Let me clarify. $35,000 is not their wage. Their wage could be $50,000 a year, $60,000 a year. The $35,000 benchmark is for the amount of the loan the business gets. So if they're getting a loan for $35,000, they have to create one job. If they're getting a loan for $70,000, they have to create two jobs. So that's the benchmark of the number of jobs that have to be created, not the salary of the jobs.
Got you. Okay. That makes Angela, a lot of sense.
Angela, could I jump in just maybe to hopefully clarify just if there is, we're talking about the people who receive the money, the groups that receive our money are passing through, right? So it's like WIBIC or Latino Chamber, et cetera, right? Just so everybody's clear, right? It's not directly to business.
Correct. Just to give you a list of who we fund now and that we've been funding for the last few years. Under technical assistance, we have funded WIBIC, the Black Chamber, Latino Chamber. Under job creation, we have funded Madison Development Corp. That is who's had the contracts since I came to the city of Madison.
Sorry, Angela, go ahead.
No, that's okay. It was one of my questions for later, but that's fine. It's okay. And then is the plan for the loans that you would be giving out this year, is it the plan that they would continue on for a certain number of years? Because you said that, you know, the ones that are currently getting funding have had it since you've been here, right? And so is that kind of the hope for moving forward, or is there like a time limited period for these dollars?
Yep. So the only two entities right now that have a loan program are Madison Development Corp and WIBIC. When we get their applications, assuming they are applying again, we will evaluate their programs to make sure that they are still meeting all the requirements that we expect of the city of Madison. And if so, yep, through, and we would be bringing a resolution and all of these applications back through this committee as well. If they are meeting the goals and the expectations, there's a line in here about revolving loan funds. Those are what we consider revolving loan funds, is they are actually holding the cash balance of all those loans. So they have given out, MDC has about a $2.4 million loan balance right now. That means those are loans that are outstanding to businesses. Business is paying MDC back And MDCs then sends those repayments back to us. That allows us to bring a resolution to you saying, you know, we want those funds to be continue to use for this. We're going to give them back out to the community. WBIC has the same revolving loan funds. They have a balance of about $330,000 right now. And so if we deem that their application is, you know, meets all of the criteria that's in the RFP, we could make a staff recommendation that that money stays with them. Is it possible, though, that we get applications and we say, the nonprofit, we've had a great running relationship, but they've decided that they no longer want to meet those. We could move in those revolving loan funds as they come in to another agency or so forth. But really, this is our opportunity to just get on paper too, from all of the nonprofits, those expectations of what's met in using these funds.
Great, okay. And then just one more point of clarification. So then MDC would be responsible for collecting all the data from all the places that they've gotten loans to let you know how many jobs have been created by all of those other companies then, okay.
Yep, yep. Our contract is for them to underwrite, and it would be the same for anyone that came through this process. They underwrite the loans. They are then responsible for tracking those job creation. And right now, most of the entities meet on a regular basis with Saran then to make sure they're meeting their benchmarks.
Okay. And then very last question, how frequently do they have to give you reporting updates?
So Saran is meeting with people about quarterly. We at minimum, because we have to put it in our CAPR report, which you all then review. We have to have all information though by year end. Job creation in particular, it's usually like someone expanding a business, maybe creating a new business. So they have 24 months to create the new jobs. So it's not like you're always going to see like right. Loan is given, new jobs. So it is an ongoing kind of tracking mechanism that we have with agencies, especially around job creation.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Alder, you got it.
Yes, Lynette or Saran. Could you just give kind of an overall view of how the enforcement process has worked? I mean, is there a clawback that these that MDC or you know WBIC are responsible for if these goals are not met? And
great question.
What does that volume look like?
Great question. Pre-pandemic, I can tell you we had very few loans where we had significant issues because they're small amounts usually, and it's usually only a handful, maybe five jobs being created. We had very few loans kind of default or not create jobs. We did see a few happen in the pandemic, unfortunately, where businesses did not work out. It is MDC's responsibility then, because usually if it defaulted of jobs not created, sometimes they're defaulting on their loan agreement as well. So again, as the subrecipient and the entity responsible for those federal funds, it's up to MDC to use their resources to file a claim or go after them through the court process of defaulting on their loan. We are putting language, and it's kind of bolded now, to make sure it is very clear. If jobs are not created, that is a violation of the CDBG funds. And so we are making it much clearer that the subrecipient then would need to return those funds or come up with funds if HUD claws those funds back because job creation wasn't made. And we're putting that very bold in the policy statement and the RFP because what we want is we want to make sure our subrecipients are underwriting and making sure that the entities they're giving loans to are set up for that job creation before they. And so that's part of that underwriting process. So we have not had to the time I have been here had to claw any money back from our nonprofit agencies so far. HUD does also allow us to kind of, I want to say, if we have another entity that creates more jobs, we are called the entitlement community. We're the reporter ultimately to HUD. They do allow me to kind of like take stuff as whole, you know, try to say like these jobs offset some jobs that haven't been created. So the few years in the pandemic where we did have some hiccups, we were able to take from some other things that we've been in the clear with HUD so far. But we really want to make sure, and that's why I think it's highlighted very boldly in this policy paper and in the future, entities need to know they are responsible for that underwriting and making sure those jobs are created, and they can't put that burden completely on the city when we don't do the underwriting of the loans.
Perfect. Okay, next question. Have we generated some thoughts, some strategy on how we would potentially get this RFP in front of other competent parties that we think might be able to carry out such a program?
I am actually going to defer to Saran because Economic Development Division has much greater robust relationships with those economic development agencies. So, Saran.
Okay. Hi, Saran.
Hi, everyone. This is my first time at the CDBG committee. So thank you for having me. Since I've started in 2021 in economic development, there's been a lot of organizations now doing more of this work. And it probably came out of the pandemic with businesses struggling, organizations getting together and figuring out we need to get out loans or provide them with more assistance. And along with our economic development plan that we're working on this year as well, we've got a lot of organizations and partnerships. So there are a lot of, I would say, a handful of at least a competent new organizations that would probably be interested in doing the work that MDC currently does. I know personally probably a handful. With our last RFP in economic development, we had a Biz Ready RFP, and we had 9 organizations that applied for that RFP. So there's a lot out there that could do this work.
Okay, now just to clarify in my mind, let's say that one of our current recipients does not get an approved in another in this RFP process. Would their whole portfolio shift to somewhere else, or would they need to manage the tail of what they're currently working on?
I think I'll need Lynette to help me with that.
So right now, the amount of funding that we are providing, especially for like the two chambers, Black uh-huh. Chamber and Latino Chamber, receive less than $35,000. So again, very small amounts.
Okay.
I got in the city in 2010. And at that time, the CDBG committee, when we funded the chambers to begin with, said words like, okay, this is seed funding, because it was the first years that they were getting it. And we have like continued the seed funding. So I say that because they're small enough amounts that if we are doing our staff allocations and we bring to you as a committee and we all decide that their applications did not meet our standards of the RFP, I believe that's a small amount that they could pivot and continue to do the mission that they're doing, probably with some other resources. But we would really have to like wait till we see those applications come in to say like, how is this going to impact, you know, the overall operations of a nonprofit?
Okay. Appreciate that. That's helpful. Thank you. No more questions.
Third question.
Saran, I just wanted to give you, if there's no other questions, I wanted to give you a chance, maybe just looking in the white paper on the second page when you're describing the challenges faced by folks. You know, you have 5 areas: access to capital, lack of mentorship, regulatory barriers, market access, technological integration. Is there anything on there that maybe you want to highlight for us that you think, you know, you could accentuate that like this didn't come out necessarily as brought as strongly, you know, in a paper, or maybe something's changed in the time since you wrote this? I don't know. Just anything, maybe giving you a chance to just highlight something or go off on something that you'd like us to know about?
I think for me, the biggest thing is probably social capital, because a lot of folks probably aren't aware. They're just more used to the financial capital, right? So I need money, so whether it's a grant or a loan, but social capital could be just as valuable. And what social capital is the knowledge, right? It's the people that they know, their networks, who understands business, who have done this work before. And a lot of folks who are, historically marginalized, they don't have that social network, right? They don't have their grandparents or father in the construction industry, in the commercial real estate industry, that could pass down property, or that could pass down that knowledge or information. And so I probably didn't highlight it as much, but I would say social capital is a big thing that not a lot of people talk about, but it's really important, that mentorship, that education, and knowing who's who could connect you to business opportunities, who could connect you to clients. So thank you for that opportunity, Matt.
Yeah, no problem. So the groups like WBIC, like the Latino Chamber, Black Chamber can help. What you're saying is can help, maybe hopefully help with some of that, kind of replacing that social capital or help making those connections and networking, I assume is what we're hoping. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. They do a great job of networking events. They do a great job of connecting, because not one organization could do it all. And so they do a
Right,
great
right.
job of connecting them to other resources. And then especially for the Latino Chamber, they're also translating. So they're helping folks who English may not be their first language. So that's like another social capital. It's like understanding the language on how to communicate and reach out to other people to grow your business as well.
That's great. Great, great work. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Anybody else? Okay. Is thanks, Sarah or Saran, sorry.
Thank you.
Any discussion? I mean, the motion is accepting not white paper, the policy paper. But any discussion on it at all before we vote? Okay, seeing none, I'll assume since there wasn't any discussion that everyone will vote yes, but if you want to vote no or abstain, please let me know. Seeing none, that motion passes unanimously. And that brings us to our last or second to last, I guess, item number six, which maybe isn't a new business item or something we have to vote on, but it's listed in a new business, so we'll do that anyway because it's under new business. And it's an update on homeless services and housing resource request for proposal. So let's just be formal and get a motion to accept the update. Seeing a motion from somebody. Thank you, Angela, and a second from Alder Dean and Nina. Lynette and Sarah, what do
So
we
I'm
got?
just going to do a little short intro. We want to provide an update before we bring the resolution of our staff recommendations from the Homeless Services and Housing Resources. I think many times when I'm writing out the work plan with this committee, I do my best to try to bring things to you guys for a discussion first and then a vote, so that you're not having to vote the night of. That's not always possible, but in this situation, we were able to look at the calendar and kind of extend the approval process of this. So that's why we were able to get this on the calendar to have this discussion before we enter the resolution. I just want to also kind of do a small disclaimer of, like, we are talking about funding to very vulnerable populations as we are trying to support, homeless services and housing resources is a huge need in our community. Sarah will go through a slide that we talk about of just general numbers. Through this committee, we talk about this topic a lot. Especially at the year end, when we kind of give our annual updates of what the outcomes were of what we funded for each of those agencies. I say that because sometimes when we are discussing the priorities of vulnerable populations and the services, it is really hard on staff who are working tirelessly to kind of address these issues. So I just want everyone to Have some heart as we discuss these. Remember, there are people behind some of these things, but also we really truly want to hear your guys' feedback so that when we bring the resolution, we know that in general, how you guys will feel about that resolution. We do not have enough funding in this RFP for all of the applications that came in. And so we very much appreciate everyone that was part of the review process. And the last thing I want to mention before Sarah goes into an overview and a reminder of what's in the RFP, and then providing you just kind of where we're at right now is for staff recommendations. It is now public what CDD submitted to the mayor for our 2026 budget recommendations. We've posted it just recently on the finances page. We did request $1 million supplemental request specifically to help support the new purpose-built men's shelter. We built that shelter with the intention for it to be 24/7. So we are trying to make sure that we as staff are honoring a commitment that we are getting to at least the current funding that we are providing for shelter activities. So as you are going through this process and listening to Sarah, please note that that $1 million isn't so much part of this RFP process, because that will be then discussed later through once the mayor releases her budget, which will be on Tuesday, October 7th. Then alders have an opportunity to look at that budget as well. But it's public now, so I want to make sure you know we are attempting to ask for that supplemental through the budget process to add to the funding from this RFP that is already going to shelter activities. So that's got my small disclaimer. I'm just going to now let Sarah do her presentation, and I'm here to support Sarah and answer any questions.
Thanks, Lynette. I'm Sarah Lim. I work at the City of Madison Community Development Division in Homeless Services. And we have my colleague, Matt Freider, who works in Housing Resources, Affordable Housing Development, who also worked with us in this RFP. I'm going to share my screen. So it is an update. Just one slide before we dive into the RFP. This is a point in time count slide. This was just updated. The RFP itself had a similar looking graph. It was up to 2024 numbers. We just updated the 2025. So we decided to bring it here. So what it's showing is point in time night, just one night, always fourth Wednesday of January of each year, showing from 2009 to 2025, like 16-year period, how many people we identified in emergency shelter, transitional housing, and unsheltered locations, such as cars or tents and street, things like that. So the bottom number is for households with children, the dark color here. Those are families with children. And then in the middle, there is unaccompanied youth under age 18. So that may be 16 or 17-year-old youth who may be on their own. And then on top are the households without children, persons in households without children, so single adults. It could be partners, sibling household, on your own, but we'll just call it family and singles here. One thing to note is that family number looks like it's actually going down. It is likely an undercount because in our community, we do have a family shelter capacity issues. On this night, there are 59 total family shelter rooms between Salvation Army, YWCA, Healing House, and domestic violence shelter. Those were mostly full, but there was about 40 families who were on the wait list, who were mostly doubled up and some of the families because it was really cold weather night, like 7 degrees. Some families were in the extreme weather hotel. So there's that for family, but you can see that single number has been increasing significantly. Just look at the trend. You will see that the Great Recession happened 2007, 8, that ended. And then after a couple years, we'll see a pretty big increase. And then it goes down for a while. This is where we had some affordable housing development and things seemed to be going great. But then we had the COVID pandemic happen. And then the number jumped up as we set up a lot of, COVID shelter type of interventions. It was going down, but as we are in the last couple of years, the numbers are increasing again. So homelessness is on the rise and the pressure on housing instability continues to grow. All right, then let's go to the RFP. So just a quick overview of the RFP. Total available was about 3.5 million. City tax levy about 1.75, plus the federal funds. I do see Alder Tinanina.
Yes, I am so sorry to interrupt you. I am curious if you have doubled up numbers on that last one.
No,
Doubled
thank
up.
you for that clarifying question. So this is just point in time number, which is the smallest set of homeless number that we collect. So this only includes people who are in emergency shelter, transitional housing, and unsheltered locations. So not doubled up or people who are self-paying in hotels or motels or people in an institution like jail or hospital, they are not included in this number.
Thank you.
So the goal of the RFP, make homelessness rare, brief, and non-recurring, and improve housing stability. And we had two funding areas. One was homeless services, which funds project types like emergency shelter, street outreach, extreme weather hotel, homelessness prevention, rapid rehousing, and permanent housing programs. And then housing resources for tenant support and eviction prevention. So those would be more upstream before households become homeless. Timeline. So we brought the draft of the RFP back in April. We received some feedback and then released the RFP in May and then had the review process here. Today is this, August 7th, for update. We will be introducing resolution at Commons Council September 2nd based on the feedback we receive here. And then we need to do some final checking with the agencies who are recommended for funding and then draft the resolution. And then it will come back to this committee September 4th and then Common Council action on September 16th. We had two strategic funding priorities. Address emergency shelter capacity challenges. As I mentioned, family shelters always have a wait list. Single shelter, currently we are able to take everybody who needs and wants the shelter, but with the new men's shelter being planned, there's going to be a challenge. So addressing that was big priority. And then leverage Medicaid and other funding sources, recognizing that we just have finite resources. What else can we leverage? So we actually had a lot of great, a lot of the applications that we received, whether it's emergency shelter, outreach, or housing programs, they had really great proposals about leverage Medicaid, especially 1959 resources, which is new this year. So we're working hard on that. Application summary. So we received for homeless services 19 applications. Amount of request was 5.2 million. We have 2.2 million. So there is a big gap there. For housing resources, we had two applications at the exact, the full funding available amount. So that part was simple, and those were strong applications. I'll go over that soon. Review process. Applications were reviewed and scored by interagency review team comprised of the CDD staff and CDBG committee member. I really would like to thank Angie Jones for joining the review team, spending countless hours reading all those applications, participating in the Q&A and the review team discussion. And then we also had a member of the county staff and Homeless Services Consortium's board of director member as well. CDD staff also reviewed the supplemental information such as financial audit, HMIS performance report, and written standard checklist, those other things, technical stuff. We had agency Q&A sessions for 2 days. Final recommendation, well, draft recommendation that I'm bringing here today was developed by CDD staff with the input from the review team, considering the federal funding rules and requirements. Okay, and there it is. And it looks a bit overwhelming, but I'll go one by one by the project type. So again, this is a draft. The first part is the simple one, the housing resources part. Tenant Resource Center was the sole applicant, and they applied for 100% of the funding available. One was tenant services, that's housing counseling, outreach, mediation, and then eviction, diversion, and defense partnership. This big number here, almost $1 million here. This is a 3-year funding amount, that's a remainder of the COVID funds that we still have. So they proposed to use it in the next 3 years. Those were both very strong proposals. All the applications submitted are posted on the City of Madison CDD Funding Opportunities website, as I have shared in before. So we're recommending the full funding for that those programs. Next up is emergency shelter. We had 5 proposals, and then I wanna draw your attention to this column. This is current year city funding amount. And then this one here is like what we're recommending. So different funding sources, and then the total here. So as you can see that we are currently funding all those shelters, and then they all reapplied. And so the funding recommendation, Lynette mentioned there, we are recommending for Porch Light Men Shelter, 700,000 of GPR is the tax levy of that, plus there was supplemental request, the budget request for $1 million. They're currently getting funded 1.7. And then the other shelter, Salvation Army Family Shelter, YWCA Family Shelter, Salvation Army Single Woman Shelter, and then Diversion Program, that's a shelter diversion, because we are not able to serve all families in the shelter. There is, a staff person who would take those calls from families who are calling the shelter to get a bed, to have the brainstorming conversation of where else you could go, because we're, not able to take you right in, that type of activities there. So as you can see, the funding amount is very similar to current year funding. We were able to add about $2,000 for each programs there. We're not funding fully of their operation cost increase. Everything cost is going up. It's not gonna meet their needs quite fully. I mean, they definitely apply for a lot more in the city process, but recognizing the limited funding that we had, this is our recommendation. Next up is street outreach. Street outreach is a key to engaging unsheltered individuals, so individuals who are individuals and families who are sleeping on the street, in front of buildings, abandoned buildings, cars, encampments, tents, those areas that they go to those places and engage, try to connect them to shelter and other resources that they may be eligible for. So there were four applications, three, traditional street outreach program, and then there was Dairy Drive 2.0 from Madison Street Medicine. We are recommending about the same level as Curoneer for Madison Street Medicine and Catalyst for Change. It's actually a little bit of decrease for both of them because of funding available. Let's see. The next up is extreme weather respite hotel for the unsheltered. This is very closely related to the street outreach activity. Only street outreach providers can apply for this funding. What it is we have very, very limited amount of funding. It's for individuals and families who are not able to get into the shelter because of the capacity issue or some other individual circumstances. They might be suspended from the shelter and, other things. So very limited on extreme weather nights, like extended heat wave or, extended, very cold nights. Street outreach programs work together to identify those folks who are at risk, safety risk, and provide some very limited 1 to 2 nights of hotel. So two agencies applied for funding. We are recommending the Catalyst for Change, the current provider, to have the same current level of funding for that program. Rapid rehousing program, we received three applications. We are currently not funding any rapid rehousing programs because we did not have any applications in the last cycle. But we did this time. And this is something that the CDD would really like to see more of because one of the funding priorities is the shelter, overcoming the shelter challenge, shelter capacity challenge, and being able to quickly house folks to move them out of the shelter is a big priority. And rapid rehousing is that that support. So this is up to 2 years of assistance, different from like permanent supportive housing program where there is no time limit. So we are recommending two of the programs here, Madison Street Medicine and Lutheran Social Services. That's all we could add to that program type. Next up is homeless prevention. Let me get my note here. While this is an important intervention, because we still have some COVID funds here, we are not recommending any funding this funding cycle with limited funds that we have. Permanent supportive housing, Amphora, formerly Tree Lane, has applied. We're not able to support them either. Other permanent housing program, two agencies applied. We're recommending to fund Porchlight scattered site housing programs. So they have 50-ish units like scattered throughout Madison that they, when there is an opening, they take the referrals from our coordinated entry system and it's for single individuals. And currently prioritizing individuals from who are regularly using the men's shelter. So that is a high priority to have that outflow from the men shelter. So we are supporting their proposal. So that is all the funds that we had here. And so that is our initial recommendation. I'm gonna there to see if you have questions.
Sarah, do we have questions for Sarah or for Lynette? How long are you here?
Just to clarify, Sarah, that recommendation is without the supplemental $1 million. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And where do you have a recommendation where, and maybe you mentioned this, for where that supplemental $1 million would be applied?
Yep. So the supplemental $1 million is specifically just for the purpose-built shelter. So that would go to Torchlight, and that, and it's two parts actually. Up to $1 million for support of the purpose-built shelter. About probably 800,000 to 700,000 for that general operations. Again, keeping the building hopefully open 24/7. And then we also really have to think about ongoing maintenance costs and utilities as well at the building that will need to be in CDD's budget, since it's a city facility that we are going to have to support and help with, you know, general maintenance and all of those things. So that's what that supplemental is for, specifically for that shelter. I should just mention, like, so that's the city's budget. We are closely continuing to work with the county as well. County is a major funder of homeless services. So also looking for their support in order to make sure that that has a robust budget as we open in the spring of 2026.
Yeah. And this was a very helpful review. Is it possible? Are you able to share Sarah's presentation?
Yes. I'm sorry I couldn't send it ahead of time. Oh, I was working on it at the last minute too.
I can appreciate. I can't even imagine how much effort it took to make those decisions and go through all of that review. And you're probably aware that the Common Council has set aside September 30th for a special meeting devoted totally. And I assume we're going to be able to see some of this information at that time as well. Okay.
Yes, Jim and I will be presenting on the robustness of our homeless needs.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Chair.
You bet. Angela, go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I did not have a question, but I did just want to give a shout out to city staff. It was an amazing process to be a part of, so much effort and time put into that. And it is always extremely, extremely hard when you have so many more dollars that are being requested than funding that you have. It makes you have to make some very, very hard decisions. And so walking through that with the city staff, we certainly felt supported in, you know, the recommendations and stuff. And they just were great to work with. So I just wanted to put that out there because it is a lot of time and effort behind the scenes to get to what you saw Sarah present today. So I just wanted to give kudos and love to them because it is extremely, extremely hard when you have to make those very hard decisions, particularly when every dollar is tied to individuals and families. So very hard. So kudos to all of you for all that hard work.
Thank you, Angie.
You're here. Yeah. And thank you, Angela, for being a part of that. I appreciate
Seeing Angie reminded me of something that I forgot. Can I just show you quickly?
Sure.
So the discussion we had at the review. I forgot to point out that there's TBRA funds. It's a home federal home TBRA funds. As you can see, that some of the shelters have this, so that it looks like Porch Light is getting like 800,000. But this is for shelter operation, like case manager for their security, food type of thing. This is, in addition, it's exclusively for secure deposit and first month rent assistance that they can use for their participants to help them move out of the shelter quickly. So we're not counting that as the shelter operating funds, but we made this available for shelter providers and all the agencies that applied for it. We're recommending the full funding for it.
Sorry, I don't know if you're TBRA, tenant-based rental assistance, is we'll call it TBRA. We also call it TBRA. We mix it up sometimes.
And so those funds have to be used for helping folks with down payment assistance or what else did you say? Eviction services, maybe?
So for this purpose, we are making it available to shelters to do when participants find housing, secure a deposit, and first month rent.
Okay. Okay. All right. Thanks. Any other questions? Okay. Well, just to reiterate what Angie said, thank you, Sarah, for all your work and other staff that have put time into this. We really appreciate it. And good luck going through the rest of the process, and we'll see you next month, right? Great. So any discussion on that? I guess, I mean, it's a technically a business item, but at the same time, it's not a resolution, so we really probably don't have to vote. But since I took a motion earlier, we'll just do that. But I probably messed up, but let's just take a vote to accept the update. I assume there won't be any abstentions or no's, so that motion passes unanimously. Thank you. Okay, and then that leads us to our last item, which definitely we don't have to vote on, and that is a staff report. Lynette, do you have anything to share, or anybody else?
No, in Jim's absence. No Jim tonight. So no big staff report. I think he probably just would have highlighted again our supplemental that I said during the presentation. We are going, as Alder Uguer said, we are slated, Jim and I, to go in front of the council to, I do believe it is a 4-hour meeting, to talk about just in general homeless services in our community and our approach and what we are doing around the shelter and some of our future plans as well. So we'll be preparing that. And most likely once we get that slide deck done, we are happy to also kind of do a shorter non-3-hour presentation to this committee as well to let you know how we are educating our elected officials just on our general strategies. So other than that, we don't have anything, but we have a lot of important meetings coming up. So as we next month finalize this RFP for homeless services and housing resources, on August 28th, August 28th, applications will be due for our Affordable Housing Fund tax credit RFP. So our review team will start looking at those applications, and then we will start organizing the presentations from the developers that applied for those proposals. We have about $10 million out in that RFP. Again, that is a great RFP that connects again with homeless services, in which our goal there is developers are also bringing service providers and taking people who are experiencing homelessness in a kind of a subset of their units. So again, us trying to merge our various goals into multiple RFP processes. On August 1st, we released our homeownership RFP. Individuals that are interested in down payment assistance, minor rehab programs, and then also homeownership development, like single family homes or condos. They are now looking at that RFP and attending a workshop later this week. Those will be due on September 26th. So future meetings, we'll be discussing that RFP as well. And then we will have the EDD RFP back in front of you once we get those applications and review them. So this was definitely the year where we could call it a summer funding process year of multiple RFPs, but we do have a calendar, and then we do have a couple of years off, except for the annual tax credit RFP we do every single year. So again, lots of important meetings. So stay tuned for lots of staff recommendations and discussions around those other RFPs.
Angela, go ahead. Thanks, Lynette.
Just a quick question to Lynette. Does this committee also then review any of the NOFO applications or that funding? No? Okay.
No. Right, the NOFO, the Notice of Funding Opportunity, is from HUD. HUD posts that they were going to go to every 2 years, going to post their NOFO for the opportunity for a continuum of care to receive HUD fundings. Surprise, surprise, the federal government has changed its mind. And when it was supposed to be our off year this year, they have now let us know they will most likely be posting a NOFO for our continuum of care to apply for. While the city is the collaborative applicant or lead applicant to the HUD funds for agencies, for both HUD and the state of Wisconsin, we allow our COC board to vote on those. So the minimum things that this committee votes on in those processes is only if the city is going to be receiving any funding through that process. And usually the NOFO is direct with the agencies, except for the Youth Homeless Demonstration Program, which does come to us, which then we give out to other agencies.
Thank you for that clarification. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Just quickly, the council presentation, the homeless presentation that you're going to give, is that a committee of the whole, maybe alders, or is that a meeting with like a presentation time in the beginning?
I don't believe it's a committee of the whole, although that term was used, because that's a more formal process. I believe that this is a general informational meeting.
But it's not at a normal council meeting, like as a presentation.
It is not a normal council meeting. This is a special meeting.
Okay. Got you. Okay. Thank you. Any other questions for Lynette or anything else? All right. Seeing none, we'll take a motion for adjournment. Alder Yeninina, and seconded by Megan. Thank you, everybody. We are adjourned. We'll see you next time.